Okay, picture this. You're on call, wards are busy, and a patient comes in with that really common complaint, progressive muscle weakness.
Right.
Maybe they say they're struggling to climb stairs, maybe lifting groceries getting harder. And then you look closer, maybe you spot a faint rash, or maybe it's the other way around. A puzzling rash is the main thing, and you're trying to figure out if it connects to some vague muscle aches.
Yeah. Is it just fatigue? Is it arthritis? Or, is it something much more systemic, much deeper?
Exactly. It's precisely those kinds of presentations that can really test your diagnostic chops, can't they? The clues are often right there, but you have to know what you're looking for.
And crucially, how to piece them all together.
Absolutely. Welcome, everyone, to 88 Diagnoses. Today, we're diving deep into dermatomyositis, DM, and polymyositis, PM. These are two immune-mediated myopathies that, well, they can be pretty sneaky, presenting in some really tricky ways. Our mission today is simple: give you the key insights to tell them apart, understand their sometimes surprising systemic reach, and approach diagnosis confidently, basically helping you avoid those common pitfalls.
Think of it as your clinical shortcut for these conditions, even when the clues are subtle.
Perfect. So let's start with the core clinical picture: the weakness, the skin stuff, and those systemic clues.
Right. So the cardinal feature for both DM and PM is this symmetric proximal skeletal muscle weakness.
Proximal meaning shoulders, hips.
Exactly. Think deltoids, hip flexors, abductors, extensors. Also, and this is interesting, often weakness of the neck flexors. But the neck extensors might be relatively spared. If you see distal weakness, like hands or feet, it's usually much milder, if it's there at all.
And this isn't usually sudden, right? It creeps up.
Yeah, typically insidious or maybe subacute, develops over weeks, sometimes months. Patients might say, it's just getting harder and harder to climb stairs, or getting out of a low chair is a real effort now, or carrying things, picking up kids.
Everyday activity is becoming difficult.
Precisely. And muscle pain, myalgias, or tenderness. That happens in maybe 25 to 50% of cases. Not always, but fairly common.
And what about joints? Because weakness can sometimes feel like joint pain, right?
That's a huge potential pitfall, especially early on. Joint pain and swelling can occur, sometimes leading everyone down the wrong path, thinking it's purely arthritis. Distinguishing true muscle weakness from fatigue or joint limitation is a really critical first step.
Okay, if you can't remember everything from this part, remember this.
Dermatomyositis and polymyositis present as proximal symmetric weakness that usually develops insidiously over weeks to months, and it can easily be confused with simple fatigue or just joint pain.
Got it. Now let's talk about the skin, because that's the big differentiator for DM, isn't it?
Absolutely. DM is unique because of its characteristic skin findings. They can be really obvious or incredibly subtle, and they often precede or show up alongside the weakness.
So what are the absolute must-knows, the pathognomonic signs?
Two big ones. First, Gautran papules. These are reddish or purplish bumps, papules symmetrically over bony bits, especially the back of the knuckles, the MCP and IP joints.
Okay.
They can also spread linearly between the joints or show up on elbows and knees. Sometimes they look scaly, almost like psoriasis.
Right. And the second one.
The heliotrope eruption, that's a reddish purplish rash around the eyes, on the periorbital skin, most classic on the upper eyelid. And sometimes you get significant swelling edema with it.
Gautran papules and heliotrope rash. Got it. Are there other skin clues we should look for?
Definitely. They might not be unique to DM, but they really help build the case. There's the Gautran sign, similar rash, maculi or patches, on other extensor surfaces like elbows, knees, ankles.
Okay.
Then facial erythema, like a redness on the midface. But here's a great on-the-words tip. In DM, this rash usually includes the nasolabial folds.
Unlike lupus, where it typically spares them.
Exactly. That's a key difference you can spot right at the bedside.
Nice. What else?
Photodistributed poikiloderma. It's a mouthful, but basically means skin changes in sun-exposed areas, mixed hyperpigmentation, hypopigmentation, little blood vessels called telangiectasias, and some skin thinning or atrophy.
Where do you typically see that?
Classic spots are the upper back, the Schall sign, and the V of the neck and upper chest, the V sign. It often looks violaceous, maybe hyperpigmented in darker skin. And another differentiator, it's often really itchy, pruritic.
Itchy, unlike SLE rashes usually.
Generally, yes.
Yeah.
Significant pruritus points more towards DM here. Oh, and the holster sign. That's the same poikiloderma, but on the sides of the thighs.
Okay, wow. Lots of skin signs. What about nails or scalp?
Yeah, check the nail folds. Look for abnormal capillaries, dilated loops, areas where they've dropped out, redness around the nail. periungual erythema, and ragged cuticles, sometimes even little hemorrhagic infarcts. The extent of this actually reflects how active the underlying vasculopathy is.
So the nails tell a story about the vessels.
They really can. And the scalp can look like bad dandruff or psoriasis scaling. Poikilodermatous changes, but often with severe burning and itching. Don't miss mechanics' hands either. That's thickened, cracked skin on the palms and sides of the fingers.
Looks like they work with their hands even if they don't.
Exactly. And finally, calcinosis cutis, calcium deposits in the skin. More common in kids with DM, but you see it in adults too, sometimes linked to certain antibodies we'll talk about later.
Okay, there's a lot there. Now, you mentioned a specific subset, MDA5.
Ah, yes. MDA5 associated dermatomyositis. This is critical to recognize. It has a distinct phenotype, often skin ulcerations over Gontran areas, nail folds, finger pulps, sometimes even necrosis, painful spots on the palms, significant hair loss, non-scarring, mouth ulcers, tender gums, mechanics' hands, calcinosis, arthritis. Quite a constellation.
And why is recognizing this MDA5 type so important?
Because clinically, these patients often have less obvious muscle inflammation, maybe even normal CKs early on, but they have a much higher risk of interstitial lung disease, ILD, and specifically a rapidly progressive, often fatal form of ILD.
Wow, so spotting those skin ulcers could be life-saving.
It absolutely could. It means you need to jump on pulmonary evaluation immediately, even if they aren't short of breath yet. Especially important if antibody testing isn't readily available or takes time. This requires rapid action.
Makes sense. So beyond the muscles and skin, what other systems get involved? You mentioned ILD.
Right. ILD is common, maybe 30-40% of DMPM cases overall, often linked with certain antibodies like anti-JO1. But that rapidly progressive form is the scary hallmark of anti-MDA5.
What about swallowing?
Good point. Esophageal involvement causing dysphagia, difficulty swallowing is common. It's due to weakness in the upper esophagus and throat muscles. This leads to a risk of nasal regurgitation and, more seriously, aspiration.
Especially in older patients, increasing pneumonia risk.
Exactly. And the heart. It can be involved too. Myocarditis, conduction problems, arrhythmias. Often these are subclinical, found on testing. Symptomatic heart failure is less common. But here's a startling fact. Patients with DM and PM have a nearly 3 to 4 times higher risk of a heart attack. And MI compared to the general population, even after you control for standard risk factors.
Whoa.
So it's a significant cardiovascular risk factor itself.
It really is.
It underscores that this is a systemic inflammatory condition.
Oh.
And finally, don't forget the association with malignancy. The risk is increased, particularly with DM, and especially if the TIF1 gamma antibody is positive.
What kinds of cancers?
Generally, it mirrors the common cancers in the population, lung, ovarian, breast, colon, etc. But the incidence is higher.
Okay, that's a lot of systemic potential. Let's try that recap again. If you can't remember everything from this section, remember this.
Dermatomyositis and polymyositis mean proximal symmetric weakness and potentially profound systemic issues beyond muscle. DM has those distinct skin findings. Gontran, papules, and heliotrope rash are key that serve as major diagnostic clues.
Right. So you've got the clinical picture forming. How do labs and imaging help confirm it? Let's talk biomarkers. CK, creatine kinase, is the big one, right?
It's usually the most sensitive muscle enzyme, yeah. It could be sky high, 10 times normal, 50 times normal, even higher in active disease. But, and this is a huge clinical point, a great on-the-wards tip CK can be normal or near normal in some DM patients.
Really? Even with significant muscle issues?
Yes, especially in what's called clinically amyopathic DM, key ADM, or sometimes even inactive DM with certain antibodies. This is a super common reason for diagnostic delay. So don't let a normal CK talk you out of the diagnosis if the rest of the picture fits.
Good tip. And CK isn't always a perfect marker for treatment response either.
Correct. It might normalize with treatment even if there's still ongoing inflammation or damage, so you can't rely on it exclusively.
What other enzymes might be helpful?
Aldolase, LDH, AST, ALT. These liver enzymes can also be elevated from muscle breakdown. Aldolase is sometimes up even when CK is normal, maybe hinting at fascial inflammation.
And the Astalt. Need to be careful not to chase a liver workup unnecessarily.
Exactly. A quick tip there. Check the GGT, gamma glutamyl transpeptidase. GGT is not in skeletal muscle. So okay. If AST and ALT are up, but GGT is normal, think muscle, not liver.
Nice. Okay, let's move to autoantibodies. You called them phenotype whisperers.
Huh, yeah, I like that term. The myositis-specific autoantibodies, MSAs, are found in a good chunk of patients, maybe 45-85%. and they really do tend to correlate with specific clinical pictures, phenotypes, and even biopsy findings.
Like anti-JO1.
Right. Anti-JO1 is classic for antisynthetase syndrome. Anti-MDA5, we just discussed, high risk for rapidly progressive ILD. Anti-HMGCR or anti-SRP point towards immune-mediated necrotizing myopathy, IMNM.
So the panel gives clues to the specific flavor of myositis.
It does. But very important on the wards, these panels are helpful guides, not definitive answers in isolation. You always have to correlate the antibody result with the clinical picture. False positives and negatives happen. A positive antibody doesn't automatically equal the disease.
Context is everything. What about other antibodies? MAAs, ANA?
Right, myositis-associated autoantibodies, MAAs, you see more in overlap syndromes like anti-ROSA, anti-LAS-SB, anti-RNP when myositis overlaps with lupus or scleroderma. Anti-RO5D2 is worth noting as a risk factor for ILD within DM.
And ANA.
Anti-nuclear antibodies, ANA, are positive pretty often, maybe up to 60% of the time at DMPM. But it's very nonspecific, not diagnostic on its own, just tells you there's some autoimmunity going on.
What about basic inflammation markers, ESR and CRP? Are they usually high?
Surprisingly, often not. They can be normal or only mildly elevated, even when the muscles are quite inflamed. If they're markedly elevated, it should make you think, is there an infection? Is there an underlying cancer? Or maybe it's an acute antisynthetase syndrome or that anti-MDA5 disease, which can sometimes present with more systemic inflammation.
Okay. So lab-wise, CK is useful but imperfect. Antibodies guide phenotypes, and ESR-CRP can be deceptively normal. What about initial imaging?
For everyone with suspected or confirmed DM or PM, you need baseline chest imaging and lung function tests, given the ILD risk.
Even if they have no breathing symptoms?
Absolutely. Start with a chest X-ray and PFTs, including diffusing capacity, DLCO. If those are abnormal, or if the patient has symptoms, or if they have high-risk antibodies like antisynthetase or MDA5, then you move to high-resolution chest CT, HRCT. Don't wait for symptoms if the risk factors point to ILD.
Proactive screening is key. Okay, let's try another summary. If you can't remember everything about labs and imaging, remember this.
CK is often high, but can be normal in DM, especially CADM, so clinical context is king. Autoantibodies help define the phenotype but aren't diagnostic alone. And always screen for ILD with CXR PFTs, even in asymptomatic patients.
Perfect. Now, the diagnostic algorithm itself, this feels like where things can get complex. When do you biopsy? When don't you? How do you put it all together?
Right. You should suspect DM or PM in anyone with that subacute or gradual proximal muscle weakness. Suspicion for DM goes way up if they have a suggestive rash. Elevated CK usually gets it on your radar, too.
And what about clinically amyopathic DM, CADM?
That's the characteristic skin findings without obvious clinical weakness. The rash is the entry point there.
So how does the approach differ based on presentation? Let's say you have classic DM, the rash and the weakness are both there.
If the findings are really classic textbook Gottron papules or heliotrope rash plus significant weakness and high muscle enzymes, and there isn't a better explanation, you can often make the diagnosis of classic DM without needing a biopsy.
Really? No biopsy needed sometimes?
In clear-cut classic DM, often not. Though you might still do an EMG or MRI or maybe a skin biopsy just to further document things or if there's any lingering uncertainty about mimics.
Okay, what about the flip side? Muscle weakness but no characteristic skin findings. Suspected polymyositis.
This group almost always needs a muscle biopsy. That's crucial. You need to confirm the inflammatory myopathy and, just as importantly, rule out mimics like muscular dystrophy, metabolic myopathies, necrotizing myopathy, or the big one, inclusion body myositis, IBM.
And EMG or MRI can help decide where to biopsy.
Exactly. They act like a neuromuscular GPS to find an actively inflamed muscle. Now, there's one key exception here. Patients with anti-HMGCR antibodies, especially if they've been on statins. If the clinical picture fits IMNM, that antibody is so specific, you often don't need the muscle biopsy.
Interesting. And what about our KIT-DM patients? Rash, no weakness.
KIT-DM is mostly a clinical diagnosis based on the rash. A skin biopsy can help rule out things like eczema or psoriasis, but here's a key point. Skin biopsy histology cannot reliably distinguish DM rash from cutaneous lupus.
So clinical correlation is vital there.
Absolutely. You could do EMG, MRI, or muscle biopsy to look for subclinical muscle involvement, but if you're confident there's no weakness and the rash is classic DM, it's often not necessary. But, and this is critical for KIT-DM even without muscle weakness, these patients still need the full workup for malignancy and systemic disease, especially ILD. Don't get complacent just because the muscles seem okay.
Good reminder. Let's talk about EMG quickly. What's its main role?
EMG is really helpful, especially early on. To confirm, the problem is in the muscle, myopathic, versus the nerve, neuropathic, like ALS or polyneuropathy, or the neuromuscular junction, like myasthenia gravis. It helps confirm a myopathic process and can guide where to biopsy.
What does a myopathic EMG look like?
You typically see increased insertional activity when the needle goes in, spontaneous activity like fibrillations and positive sharp waves when the muscle is at rest. And then when the patient contracts, the motor unit potentials are small, short, and polyphasic with early recruitment.
Okay. Any practical tips for EMG?
Yes. Draw the blood for CK and other muscle enzymes before the EMG study. The needles themselves can cause a temporary CK bump for a day or two. And make sure the electromyographer samples multiple muscles, including paraspinals, as the involvement can be patchy.
Good tips. What about muscle imaging? MRI and ultrasound.
These are great non-invasive tools. MRI is very sensitive. It shows edema, which indicates inflammation, but also long-term changes like atrophy, fatty replacement, even calcification. Big advantage. It can scan large muscle areas, avoiding the sampling error you can get with a single small biopsy. It's also useful when CK levels aren't reliable.
Can MRI patterns give clues to the subtype?
Sometimes, yes. Immune-mediated necrotizing myopathy might show more atrophy and fat early on. Fascial inflammation is often prominent and widespread in DM, and ITEM has that characteristic pattern in the thigh, hitting the vastus lateralis and medialis, but sparing the rectus femoris.
That's quite specific, and ultrasound.
Musculoskeletal ultrasound is an alternative. Less expensive, quicker. Active inflammation can make the muscle look darker, hypoechoic, and show increased blood flow on Doppler. It is more dependent on the operator's skill, though.
Okay, finally, the muscle biopsy itself. The gold standard, especially for PM.
Generally, yes. Particularly for differentiating PM from its mimics. You're looking for inflammation, muscle fiber damage, necrosis, degeneration, and repair, regeneration.
How does the histology differ between DM and PM?
In DM, the injury pattern is centered around the blood vessels and the edges of the muscle bundles perivesicular. So you see pork fascicular atrophy, inflammation in the connective tissue around the bundles, paramecium, and you can stain for complement C5B9 deposited in the small vessel walls.
Okay, parafascicular for DM. What about PM?
PM is classically an endomyocial process. The inflammation is within the muscle bundles, surrounding and sometimes invading individual muscle fibers. It's mostly CD8 plus T cells doing the invading. You see scattered, damaged fibers throughout, but no real vasculopathy.
But you mentioned a twist. PM histology can look like IBM.
This is the major challenge. Standard PM histology, endomysial inflammation, invading T cells can look identical to inclusion body myositis. You must have the pathologist look specifically for features of IBM like rimmed vacuoles, P62 positive inclusions, or cytochrome oxidase negative fibers using special stains. Clinical correlation is absolutely essential here.
So choosing the biopsy site and pathologist matters.
Hugely. Biopsy, a muscle that's weak but not completely wasted, maybe MRC grade 4 out of 5, avoid muscles recently tested with EMG. Quads, deltoid, biceps are common sites. Open biopsy usually gives better tissue than needle biopsy. And communication with your pathology lab about what you suspect is critical.
What about skin biopsy? When is that most useful?
Mostly to rule out other rashes that mimic DM, like eczema or psoriasis. But again, it cannot reliably distinguish DM from cutaneous lupus on histology alone. The pattern is often interface dermatitis with some other changes, but it overlaps significantly with lupus.
Okay, that's a dense section. Let's boil it down. If you can't remember everything about the diagnostic algorithm, remember this.
Classic DM, rash plus weakness, might not need biopsy. Polymyositis almost always needs a muscle biopsy to confirm and rule out mimics. KADM, rash only, needs a full systemic workup regardless of muscle status. Don't be fooled by a normal CK and DM. And crucially, PM and IBM can look alike on biopsy. Clinical context and special stains are vital.
Excellent. Now let's talk about those mimics. Avoiding diagnostic pitfalls is huge here. What are some red flags that should make you think, maybe this isn't DM or PM?
Right. Big red flags include asymmetric weakness or weakness that's predominantly distal, like hands, fingers, feet, that strongly suggests IBM. Also, intermittent symptoms, muscle pain as the only symptom without weakness, significant muscle atrophy early on, or calf hypertrophy, scapular winging.
Things that don't quite fit the usual proximal symmetric pattern.
Exactly. Also, a family history of muscle disease points towards inherited myopathies. A clear history of a drug known to cause myopathy is obviously key.
Mm-hmm.
And any signs or symptoms suggesting a nerve problem, neuropathic features, rather than a muscle problem. If you see these, pause and think broader.
Okay, so let's run through the key players in the differential. You've mentioned IBM several times.
Inclusion body myositis, IBM. It is, hands down, the most common condition misdiagnosed as polymyositis. We've all encountered that patient labeled refractory PM for years, who eventually turns out to have IBM. It truly tests your diagnostic persistence.
How do we tell IBM apart, clinically?
IBM usually has a much slower, more insidious onset, often over years. The weakness is often asymmetric. It has a predilection for certain muscles, forearm muscles, especially wrist and finger flexors, making it hard to grip things, and quadriceps, often worse than hip flexors, plus weakness in the anterior tibialis causing foot drop. Deltoids might be relatively spared compared to PM, and CK levels are generally lower, usually less than 10 times normal.
And the biopsy can be tricky too.
Yes, those classic inclusion bodies aren't always seen, maybe missing in 20-30% of biopsies. That's why looking for those other features like P62 inclusions or COX negative fibers is so important. MRI helps too, showing that specific thigh muscle pattern and offer more fatty infiltration. And now we have antibodies, like anti-CN1A, that can help support an IBM diagnosis.
Okay, IBM is the big PM mimic. What else?
Antisynthetase syndrome. We mentioned it with anti-JO1. It has myositis, but look for the constellation. Often acute onset, fever, weight loss, Raynaud's, those mechanics hands, arthritis, non-erosive, and importantly, interstitial lung disease. It's a distinct syndrome.
Then there's immune-mediated necrotizing myopathy, IMNM.
Right. Clinically, this looks a lot like PM proximal weakness, often very high CKs, muscle pain. The key is the biopsy. Loss of muscle fiber necrosis, but minimal or no inflammation around the healthy fibers. Instead, you see complement deposition, MAC, on the muscle cell membranes, often linked to statins with anti-HMGCR or anti-SRP antibodies.
Drugs are a big category too, right?
Huge. Steroids themselves can cause myopathy. Glucocorticoid myopathy, statins are famous for it, antimalarials, colchicine, some antivirals, and now checkpoint inhibitors used in cancer therapy. Always, always take a detailed medication history.
What about endocrine causes?
Hypothyroidism is a classic mimic. Can cause proximal weakness, elevated CKs. Look for other signs of low thyroid function, slowed reflexes, a key clinical sign, and check a TSH. EMG and biopsy findings are different too. No fibrillations usually. No inflammation on biopsy.
And conditions that cause fatigability rather than true weakness.
Myasthenia gravis, MG.
Ah.
That's a neuromuscular junction problem. Key differences. Weakness that gets worse with activity, fatigability, often involves facial or eye muscles, normal CK levels, specific EMG findings, decrement on repetitive stimulation, and antibodies like ACHR or MuSK. DMPM rarely hit the eye muscles.
What about inherited muscle diseases, muscular dystrophies?
They're on the list. Sometimes biopsies show inflammation, but it's usually secondary, right next to dying muscle fibers, not diffusely infiltrating healthy fibers like in PM. The pattern of weakness, family history, and genetic testing help distinguish them.
And finally, skin rashes that look like DM.
Cutaneous lupus, CLE, is the big one. As we said, histology can overlap. Clinical clues are key. DM rash often itches more, hits the salabial folds, can have the holster sign. Psoriasis or seborrheic dermatitis on the scalp can look similar, but check for typical scales, silvery versus greasy yellow. And remember, DM scalp often has poikiloderma, which the others don't. And don't forget drug-induced rashes that look like DM hydroxyurea, TNF inhibitors, statins again.
Okay, a very broad differential. Let's recap the mimics. If you can't remember everything, remember this.
The differential is huge, but asymmetric or distal weakness or a clear drug exposure should make you pause. IBM is the great PM imposter look for asymmetry and specific muscle patterns. And telling DM skin from lupus skin requires sharp clinical skills and the whole picture.
All right, we've diagnosed it. We've ruled out mimics. What happens after the diagnosis, the post-diagnostic checklist? This seems crucial.
It absolutely is. Once you've made the diagnosis of DM or PM, the work isn't over. Proactive screening for the major systemic complications is non-negotiable for every single patient.
Okay, what's top of the list?
Two big things for everyone. Interstitial lung disease, ILD assessment, and malignancy screening.
So for ILD, you already mentioned CXR and PFTs for all.
Yes. Baseline CXR and PFTs with diffusing capacity, DLCO for everyone. Then HRCT of the chest, if symptoms, exam findings, PFTs are abnormal, or if they have high-risk antibodies like antisynthetase or MDA5. Early detection and management of ILD are critical.
And malignancy screening, just standard age-appropriate stuff.
Start with a thorough history, full physical exam, including breast, rectal, pelvic exams as appropriate, and definitely do all the standard age-appropriate screening, mammograms, colonoscopies, pap smears, etc. But especially for DM patients or those with high-risk antibodies like TIF-1 gamma, many experts recommend a more comprehensive malignancy screen.
What might that involve beyond the standard?
It's debated, but might include things like cross-sectional imaging, CT chest, abdomen, pelvis, certain tumor markers, or more frequent screening, particularly in the first few years after diagnosis when the risk is highest.
Mm.
It needs to be individualized, but the key is to have a higher index of suspicion.
Okay, ILD and cancer screening for everyone. What else based on symptoms?
If the patient reports dysphagia, difficulty swallowing, you need to evaluate that. Consider formal swallowing studies or esophageal motility testing because of the aspiration risk.
Makes sense. And the heart.
If there's any clinical suspicion signs of heart failure, palpitations, abnormal ECG, then get an echocardiogram and repeat the ECG. In select cases where myocarditis is suspected, cardiac MRI can be very helpful.
Got it. So, quick summary for post-diagnosis. If you can't remember everything, remember this.
After diagnosing DM or PM, your job includes proactive screening, ILD screening, CXR-PFTs plus MONITH-HR-CT, and malignancy screening, thorough history physical, age-appropriate screening plus lymphatic expanded workup are non-negotiable for all patients.
Fantastic. Let's try to pull this all together with a quick case. Imagine you're evaluating Mrs. Reynolds. She's 68 years old. She comes in with a three-month history of progressive trouble, getting up from chairs, lifting her arms to comb her hair, that classic proximal pattern. She also mentions a persistent itchy rash on her knuckles and eyelids that actually started before the weakness. Initial labs show a CK of 1800 UL, so elevated but not wildly high. And she mentions some mild difficulty swallowing.
All right, so proximal weakness, rash on knuckles and eyelids, itchy, some dysphagia. What's jumping to the top of your differential based on that? And what specific skin findings are you zeroing in on during your exam?
Based on all that, dermatomyositis is definitely number one. I'd be looking really closely for Gautrain papules on those knuckles and any sign of a heliotrope rash around her eyes.
Perfect. Classic DM picture shaping up.
Yeah.
So what are the crucial next steps in terms of labs and initial systemic workup?
I definitely order a comprehensive myositis antibody panel, both MSAs and MAAs. And given the ILD risk inherent to DM, plus her age and dysphagia, baseline chest x-ray and PFTs with DLCO are immediate orders.
Excellent. Now, here comes the twist. Her myositis panel comes back, and she's positive for anti-MDA5 antibodies.
Yeah.
And her PFTs, despite her feeling okay breathing-wise, show a new, mild, restrictive pattern with a reduced DLCO.
Ooh, okay. Anti-MDA5.
How does that specific antibody result immediately change your level of concern and your management plan? And what level of malignancy screening are you thinking about now for this 68-year-old with anti-MDA5 positive DM?
Wow, yeah, the anti-MDA5 is a huge red flag. That immediately tells me she's at very high risk for rapidly progressive ILD, even with only mild PFT changes now. My concern skyrockets.
And what do you do?
Aggressive pulmonary monitoring is key. I'd get an urgent HRCT of the chest to better define the ILD, get pulmonology involved immediately, and likely start immunosuppression sooner and perhaps more aggressively, targeting the potential lung involvement. We can't wait for symptoms.
Exactly right. And the malignancy screening.
Given her age, the DM diagnosis itself, and now the anti-MDA5 antibody, I wouldn't just settle for standard age-appropriate screening. I'd push for a comprehensive malignancy workup, likely including CT scans of chest, abdomen, pelvis, maybe relevant tumor markers, and ensuring all her age-appropriate screening is completely up to date and thoroughly reviewed. The risk is just too high to be conservative here.
Fantastic. That really illustrates how one specific lab result integrated with the clinical picture can drastically alter the risk assessment and management plan. It highlights that DM and PM aren't just muscle diseases.
Not at all. They're complex, multi-system conditions that really demand sharp diagnostic skills and that proactive approach to looking for complications.
Absolutely.
So the next time you're on rounds, seeing a patient with unexplained weakness or that puzzling rash, remember what we've unpacked today. Listen closely to the story, examine meticulously for those subtle clues, and really think about these conditions and their systemic reach.
Apply these lessons, share those aha moments when you piece things together, and keep diving deep into diagnosis.